Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life. Hello Ange, how are you?
Hi David, good to see you. Feels like ages, but I'm sure it's not that long.
I know, I think this is probably less than 2 weeks since we last spoke.
I'm getting attached to you. You better watch it.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'll be buying a ticket to Canada one way.
You'll have to find me. It's a big country.
I like your style. So what have you been up to?
Well, funnily enough, I've just been editing a podcast.
Oh,
I know. I did a recording with Kim Stiles that will come out in June.
Great.
And I'm just doing the editing for that. And it was lovely to speak with her and to catch up with her after a long time. So, yeah, the listeners will get an interview with Kim in the near future.
I look forward to hearing that as well. Great.
Mm. And what I really like to hear about from you is this new ring that I suddenly found on Instagram. There's clearly been cast. Oh, I've not seen you do a cast ring before, I don't think.
Well, I have done a few cast pieces before, but this particular one is just sort of gone a bit beyond my normal aesthetic, shall we say, but I absolutely love it. I was encouraged to do it during the wax carving course that I was doing at Morley with my tutor, Russell Lounsborough. And I'd been making settings, these geometric settings for some gemstones. And Russell kind of challenged me to sort of make a ring with lots of quite clean cuts and geometric shapes and try to set a stone of the same sort of dimensions into it. So it was actually really good fun. It's the way I approach wax carving, unless it's a commission, it's very freestyle. So I sort of have a rough idea in my head what I want to do. And then I just sit and start whittling. And it was just so much fun watching this mammoth thing evolve. And part of the process, as well as making the actual piece and carving in wax, was cutting the seat for the stone in wax, which I know you've done quite a bit of yourself, and I've not done that before. So that was another challenge for me. And because I'd also completed Russell's stone setting and graving courses for setting stones, that was another thing to sort of push me into making this monstrosity, this beautiful monstrosity. I've actually entitled it A Superhero Ring for a Dystopian Future.
It's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And what is the gem you've set in it?
The gem, it's just one that I had in my gem stash. I think I bought it, a couple of years old, off a seller on Instagram. I think they were based somewhere in India, but he had the most gorgeous cuts of stones. And he sort of sent me a range of colours and a range of shapes. And I've been meaning to do something with them for ages, but didn't feel that I had the setting skills to do them justice. So I actually set the stone yesterday in the She Cave, and I posted a little video whilst I was doing it. And a couple of people messaged me, and I said, I think I was breathing maybe every 10 minutes. I'd take a breath as I was hammering around the stone. Because the setting is so specific, you know, to the stone, I just felt if I broke it, that'll be it. It's a complete waste of a setting. It's not quite finished. I've got to do the bright cut around the sort of perimeter of the stone, but I'm actually really happy that the stone is in place, and I've sort of deliberately dropped it a few times just to make sure it's not going to fall out. So as well as being quite chuffed with my wax carving, I'm pleased that I've managed to set a stone in this way. So I'll definitely be giving that another try. How do you find setting stones in wax?
Interesting, because you're cutting out a shape and trying to guess what it is when you're looking at the underside of your gem.
Yeah.
And to do that in reverse, to be removing the wax and to the shape of the underside of the gem is an interesting thing to do. And then obviously you've got to seat it so that it's flat and square. I've had all sorts of different interesting experiments with things like that. Sometimes melting some wax and putting it back in just so I can carve it out again. Because, of course, that's a lovely thing about wax. If you get it wrong, you just melt some in and off you go again.
Definitely, because you set some really unusual stones, some of them like little monuments, really, haven't you?
Well, to be honest, they're easier. So you're thinking of the steel blue kyanite, or is it a kunzite? Kunzite that I set just recently. So yes, it looks like a little sugarloaf.
Wow.
But it's such a huge amount of gem below the girdle that to actually set it that way up, I would have had to make the actual top of the ring much bigger. And there would have been a lot to actually kind of carve out in there. So I thought, well, if I set it, cule it up, not only is it more interesting that way, but the setting is going to be much shallower and easy to go. And what I did with that, I actually made the setting really quite tight on the wax. Right. And as you know, when you cast in wax, the piece comes out slightly smaller. So I could just gently take away a bit of the silver. And though it was a trillion, it wasn't a perfect trillion in that one side was shorter than the other two. So it came down to a slight point. So I could get it so that the point popped in under and I could then push the gem in and it was secure. So yeah, that's how I set that one. But that was fun to do. And then cutting out the trillions on the side, there were two little tanzanite trillions. Basically, this was a test piece for me to see how well I could do it as well, in that I have another ring, which is a commission, which has two trillion cut alexandrites in it. And I've already made the wax. It's now being cast in the client's own 9-carat gold. And I now have it back and I'm just finishing it up, ready to set the two alexandrites in that, which will be done sometime this week.
Brilliant. Talking of setting, I sort of had my first encounter with a professional setter today because, you know, I've got these gorgeous stones that I got from Fiona Haynes of Wise Fig Gems. And beautiful shapes, very similar to the ones that I've set in this monster ring. But because they're so pointy at, you know, certain edges, I didn't want to take the risk of setting them myself. And it's in 14 carat as well. So even though I learned the skills of cutting the seat with the graver, I thought I had to leave it to professionals. So I popped down to Hatton today and met a very nice man who assures me that he'll do it justice for me, so I can report back next time and maybe give him a plug, but I'll keep quiet with that.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, lots of people do use setters. So when you're using kind of kite-shaped gems and things like that with long points, the last thing you want to do is kind of ping and then it's gone. Oh. Totally know that. I mean, I've seen a lot of kite shapes and similar shapes set where they actually expose the corners.
Oh,
so it's
really?
Just clasped along the long sides and the short sides, and obviously that leaves that part of the gem exposed, you know, means you could stab someone with it or you could ping it off on something.
Yeah.
It's a way of not having to hammer on that very tiny thin point.
Yeah,
by, you know, coming up with a design that allows that to be seen in all its glory.
You're giving me food for thought there. That's another approach I could take then, rather than chickening out, setting it myself, approach it in a different way. But I guess you've got to then know, warn the person that's buying it that piece is particularly vulnerable.
Yeah, or have it so that it doesn't actually stand that proud of the actual ring itself. So that it, you know, that the setting might be smaller than the overall size of the rings and everything.
Rightly.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, the other thing that happened to me last week, I think, do you remember the last chat that we had? I was speaking of the competition that I'd entered.
Yes.
How I didn't think I had a cat and hell's chance of winning anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually became a runner-up.
It's fantastic.
For various reasons, I wasn't able to go at the last minute, and I didn't really think I would win anything. The actual winner of the prize, Joanna Boateng, she contacted me on the night, and she said, "And you won a runners-up prize and a special prize as well." So I was really excited. So the first competition I've actually entered, which is even more exciting, and yeah, nice cash prize. And also another company that does programs whereby you can virtually try on jewelry. So you can have this program on your website where people can actually see pieces that you've made on there. So I got that as well. So I'm looking forward to hearing from that.
Yeah. So what was the competition?
The competition was run by Croit, which was the brainchild of a gemologist whose name is Leslie Bailey. And Leslie has been working in Hatton for a few years as a gemologist and has sort of got to know people there. But I've sort of met her briefly and we had a bit of a chat. And she said she felt there was a gap in the market for jewelers from Black and ethnic minority backgrounds. So she set up a competition with those people in mind. So it was, by all accounts, a wonderful night. Lots of sort of big names in the jewelry business, sort of from Jewelry Retailer magazine to jewelry journalists. So I'm really sorry that I missed it, and it looked like a lovely event. But yeah, it was really nice to be a part of it. It sort of gave me a bit of motivation, should we say, to enter more competitions, because I know you've entered a few, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've done a lot through SNAG, Society of North American Goldsmiths, which you can be an international member of. So that's how I got involved with them. And they provide information weekly on opportunities across North America. And some are just online shows, and some where you have to actually provide the piece of jewelry as well. And some of them you can enter for free, some they charge, some you enter for free. And then if you get selected to go into a publication or something, then they, you know, that there'll be a charge for that. Oh. So there's all sorts of stuff you can do through SNAG. I've had a lot of exposure in North America, which is where I still believe most of my customers are.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of the American women seem to be far more adventurous with their jewelry wearing than a lot of English women have been, from the experience that I've had with the sales that I've made. And I had one particular customer who's now got four of my rings and probably some of the most outrageous designs as well. And she's now, funnily enough, possibly getting onto a TV show. And if she does, she wants to have a pendant made. So fingers crossed on that one as well.
Yeah. Fantastic. It's funny you should say that about North America, because actually, yes, I don't know about you. Do you still have an Etsy shop? I still sell on Etsy. And the majority of my Etsy sales are to the US. And a couple of weeks ago, I had a repeat customer who bought what I think are my most wacky designs. But that was her ninth purchase of mine. And this has been since 2016, when I first started on Etsy. So it's nice to have that kind of not only transatlantic audience, but also repeat customers in that way, and people that kind of like what you do. Even though my style's changed since she bought her first piece, she's still kind of investing in my little brand. So that's always really nice.
That's lovely. So why have you continued with an Etsy shop? I mean, I've got my Etsy shop, but it's the remains of the collections that I no longer feature go into my Etsy shop.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually. Probably over the past 6 months, I've reached that same conclusion. I think I do like it because my international clients have found me. On the whole, most of my UK sales, most of my sales would be UK based. There are a couple from the US and Europe, and I've had a little bit further afield. But yes, Etsy sort of still allows me to tap into the US market. But I must admit, it feels like it's dying on its feet from a jewelry point of view, as in trying to, you know, get yourself found, because it's such a competitive area or category on Etsy. And there is a lot of so-called handmade stuff on there, shall we say, that we compete against. So yeah, I think I am winding it down slowly, but I'm sort of quite happy for stuff to sit in there.
Same with me. I mean, I had a collection called Continuum that was based on Celtic Knot. Oh. And that, I think there are three pieces left of that now, and a piece of that sold through Etsy. just last month or the month before, and you know, the others are just sitting there until they go. And what I do is that what I do that as well is that that becomes my stock for an oops, I forgot a present for someone.
I like that. Yeah, we all need one of those.
Yes. So quickly gets whipped off the Etsy side and you know, wrapped up.
And the other thing with Etsy as well, you know, as with all businesses, I guess they've recently put their fees up, and I kind of feel that, you know, we're kind of getting less support, but you know, they're asking more from us. So yeah, that's kind of why I'm not as committed to it as I was in previous years.
I don't remember, on your website, are you Squarespace, Shopify? What do you use? Yeah, same as me. I decided on that when it came to actually creating the website. And interestingly, one of the things that Emma was saying up in Leeds is that she uses Shopify. And with Shopify, you have to, very much like Etsy, you have to start dispatching things within a certain time.
Oh, really? What, you have pardon me over it?
No. Yeah, they get quite shirty if you don't stick to your agreed dispatch times and things like that. Which, I mean, I do set dispatch times, as I'm sure you do, on the Squarespace. And I always stick to that. Or if I don't, I'll always email the client saying, very sorry, this is going to be delayed by X number of days because of whatever. But with Shopify, they really get shirty, apparently, if you don't stick to the times that you set up.
That's useful to know, because I have been toying with the idea of Squarespace. I love, because it's reasonably user-friendly for me. But I've heard that for certain things, it can, for example, slow down your page loading speed, things like that. So there are problems with it. But on the whole, I'm quite happy with it. I think if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, especially with the websites as well. Yeah. I mean, it's been tweaked since it was last updated, which was 2021. So it's, you know, am I ready for another complete rewrite? Well, I think when we get to Canada fixed, then we might get a rebrand on the website again.
Time to sort of have a refresh, because you're going to be in, you know, different area, different audience, more local audience, hopefully. That'd be great.
Yep. And no issues with an essay office either. Taking forever. Nine days.
It's only nine. Hey, the last thing that I had essayed, it took 12 days. So you're not doing badly with nine. What happens in Canada then regarding hallmarking? How does that work?
They don't hallmark.
Ah.
This is the peculiar thing. I mean, I haven't investigated it wholly in Canada, but in the US, they will sell items as silver when they're silver plate. And there's no necessity to say that it's plate.
Right.
Again, with American clients, a lot of them have been surprised that they're getting sterling silver because of they expected to pay more for it.
Right. That's interesting.
And it's something that you always need to ask in the States, if it says silver or gold, you know, is it actually solid and they use different carats. I mean, they don't go down to 9 carat in the States. I think the minimum they tend to use is 14.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, that's one less expense you'll have.
Yes, absolutely. And I sell it as soon as I've made it, rather than it'll be 2 weeks by the time I've sent it up there. They've done it, got it back.
And so what else is happening in your world?
Well, I'm still working on some stained glass. I don't know if you've worked out that...
How is the loaf of bread and the cat getting
on? Well, the loaf of bread has changed. We are now in baguette world rather than cottage loaf. Cat is now ready. The pie has become smaller.
I forgot the pie.
You were going to work out a joke for this. Don't you remember? I'm waiting on the client to finally tick the box for yes, they're happy with the design. We've reworked the size about 3 times, but we now know exactly what size it's meant to be, so I will probably start that next week. I've got the reproduction Victorian cementing, and I have the one that is based on a wallpaper design for some friends, cementing as well on the first side, so they'll be cemented tomorrow and they'll be finished and ready to deliver at the end of the week.
And what's the wallpaper design? I do love a good wallpaper. Is it something like William Morris or?
No, it's a very kind of mid-century inspired kind of leaf pattern. And the leaves have lots and lots of lines in them. But what I've done is I've probably taken one in every 5 lines and used that as a lead line on the leaf. This wallpaper's in their downstairs loo.
Right.
And they just have ordinary obscured glass in the tiny little window. So John Arell very kindly have put us up, well, one of the people have put us up while we've been back from Canada. So I said, you know, would you like a little stained glass window in there to emulate the actual design you've got everywhere else?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, that'd be lovely. So that's what I'm doing.
That's much better than a box of chockies. You can come and stay with me anytime.
How big's the window in your loo?
I've got three.
Okay, I'll be staying a long time then.
And that's so nice. You know, they get something to remember you by, so to speak. You know, it's rather than just a bottle of wine or whatever. It's, you know, it's part of you, part of your work. I really like that. That's lovely.
Yeah, thank you. And then Sarah and Richard, who we're staying with at the moment, are coming on Thursday to a ring-making workshop for just the two of them. And they're going to make themselves a ring each.
Very nice. I like that thing of, you know, skill exchange, or rather than, you know, being a monetary exchange for a deed, you do something that has some meaning behind it or will have some longevity behind it. I think that's really nice. This could be the future money. Instead of money, we just pay for things. Exchange of skills.
I do. Well, my friend Helen Yardley, who I'm going to get on here at some point, she's a rug designer.
Ooh.
And so she fell in love with Dal de Vere stained glass some years ago, and she came across the Dal de Vere in Buckfast Abbey in Devon, totally fell in love with it, thought she'd like to try doing it herself, and found me as the only person doing Dal de Vere in the UK. So she was adamant she wanted to do a workshop to understand it and make an entire panel. So, and how much would it cost? So I thought, well, I quite fancy a hand-knotted and uniquely designed rug. So we did a deal. She came and spent a day making a rather lovely stained glass panel. And we still haven't got round to having our rug designed, mind you, but that's the idea.
Wow.
I know, I thought that's a really far more fun than saying, yeah, pay me 300 quid and I've got a rug.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I think, actually, I do know quite a few creators that do that. And I have done similar. A friend of mine, she's a collage artist. And I'm so glad I did this with her in the infancy of her career, because she now sells her work for far more than I could ever afford. But I can say I've got three of her pieces.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I think it is the way forward, definitely for creatives, because, you know, we do love other mediums. And sometimes you look at things and you think, oh, you know, I can't afford to buy that or pay for that. But there's no harm in asking.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, sitting behind me at the moment is, or rather standing behind me at the moment, is my friend Patrick, who shares the space with me. And we did a show together many years ago for the Brighton Artist Open Houses called 100 Watts. And it was to celebrate the fact that the 100 watt light bulb was being discontinued.
Yeah.
And at the time, Patrick had had this kind of house shape constructed, and we each had a room, which was a box. And the boxes could be subdivided. So mine was subdivided into four. And I created stained glass panels to talk about the 100 watt bulb somehow. So it either depicted the 100 watt bulb in the shape and size, or I think I had the letter C and a question mark and a bulb in it, you know, C for 100, and, you know, why is it going? And the fourth little bit was a whole set of light bulbs, which I simply put a piece of copper foil around and soldered them all together as the antithesis for a Tiffany lampshade, because here are the bulbs and not the shade. And Patrick ended up having three of those panels, which he now has in his home. So the three stained leaded panels he has there. The light bulbs, I think, got binned by me. Patrick had me around for supper a couple of weeks ago, and there they were, lo and behold, sitting there in part of his home, you know, beautifully illuminated. But it's lovely to see.
Exactly. And, you know, these things, they're things that you want to keep, you know, money. Yes, you buy something off someone, they spend the money, but having that actual piece, yeah, that's the way forwards. I might even start an app where artists can exchange skills or something.
I like that idea.
Well, he said dubiously.
Yeah, what do I have to give for a cake? You can have a stained glass window if I get a cake every week for a year or something like that.
Oh, David, you've obviously not don't know much about my baking.
Okay, we'll have to work on something else.
Yeah, maybe something a little smaller. So what's been happening in your world? Who are you looking at on Insta at the moment? Because I must admit, I've not been great. I started a challenge in May. And again, for various reasons, I've come off the wagon, but I am going to restart tomorrow.
Who should I talk about this time? There's so many people. Well, I've been buying a lot of stuff from Justin, and I've talked about Xander Gemstones before, but I can't talk about him again. So who shall we talk about? Let's have a quick look. And have I talked about Helen? I don't think I've talked about Helen Yardley before, have I?
No, I don't think so, no. Just
so I'm going to talk about Helen. So it's Helen Yardley Studio is the Instagram. And she makes the most amazing rugs. I mean, they are just to die for. Very mid-century modern, similar aesthetic to, you know, what I like to do. She worked. She gave her time as a model for me for jewellery early on. And she modelled a lot of pendants, earrings, necklaces for me. And she's just an absolutely lovely lady. She has her studio based near London Bridge Station in London. I mean, she does do enormous rugs. I mean, she does rugs for hotels and, you know, 100-foot rugs and things like this, as well as for people's homes. And you can find her work in the CAA Gallery in London.
It's near Paddington, isn't it?
It is. It's up in Marylebone, High Street, I think. I can't think what CAA stands for other than craft and artist and something else.
No, I know I know exactly what you mean. Oh, that's nice. I might have to mosey along and have a look. Because every once in a while, new makers, don't they? They sort of introduce new makers to the shop. So
do go and have a look. So she's going to be my Instagram for this recording for Helen Yardley Studio. And who is yours?
Well, mine is George Jensen of George Jensen.
Oh, yes.
It was my birthday on Saturday. So
happy birthday.
Thank you. 21 again.
And you don't look a day over 19.
Good answer. So my lovely other half arranged a day out. So we went for a lovely breakfast, followed by a trip to the Royal Academy to see a fantastic exhibition called Souls Grow Deep Like the Rivers of Black Artists from the American South. But we arrived a bit early, and a friend of mine from Morley had mentioned that the George Jensen shop were doing demonstrations for London Craft Week. So sort of 5-minute walk. So we popped in there and had the most lovely talk to a gentleman who'd worked for George Jensen, sounds like all his life. And he explained how this amazing fine silver dish had been forged. And there were videos of this forging process, just mind blowing. So now I want anvil and a nice big log. So forget the stained glass, David. I'm coming to yours for a log and an anvil. And we chatted to a lovely apprentice who was doing some texturing on a fine silver dish. So just sitting demonstrating. And it was beautiful. And I've always loved George Jensen. I just feel their designs are quite timeless. So yes, that will be my recommendation for this week. So that
fantastic.
George Jensen, GeorgJensen.
That means we're done.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, it's been lovely chatting again.
Yes, it has. We've been waffling on well, haven't we?
And there seem to be people out there who enjoy our blethering. So I think, let's just keep it going. But I have potentially got some goodies lined up who want to come on and chat. So I'll have a little talk about it. But lovely catching up as always, Mr. Lilly.
Indeed, Miss Benjamin. And I will see you soon.
Brilliant. Bye for now.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track of Topi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.